morning, honorable members. Good morning to the department, the DOC and GCIS, the entity. Welcome to this meeting. I hope you really feel welcome. And we're going to proceed with our meeting. So we didn't, I don't know what happened, we didn't receive the documents or DOC. But nevertheless, we are going to deal with it because we hardly have time to reschedule another meeting. Therefore, we are going to continue. Because the norm is if you don't receive the documents in time, we are not going to listen to allow you to. Thank you very much, honorable members. Do I have the buy-in that we are going to proceed with DOC? The documents arrived late. Thank you very much. Can we introduce ourselves? I'm Ellen Prince. I'm the chairperson of this meeting of communications. And I'm representing the Western Cape. Can I give over to the honorable members to introduce themselves?
Thank you and good morning, honorable chair. My name is Ulitile Sepako. I'm from Northwest. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, everybody. I'm Kathy Labuschagne, representing the Western Cape.
Good morning, all. My name is Omi Singh, a member of this committee representing KwaZulu-Natal.
Sanbonane, Umozawa Nkosi Mlambo, representing Gauteng.
The acting DG for the DOC, name alone, can you, your team, introduce yourself?
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Sakali Baloni. I'm the acting DG for the DOC. Good morning.
My name is Zweli Njani Momeka. I am the CFO of GCIS, born in the Northwest, lived in the Northern Cape for 7 years. I'm a citizen of Gauteng as well.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Matopi Trusi. I'm the chief director in the Department of Communications.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Karabo Sebati from GCIS Strategic Planning and Performance Monitoring Unit.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Geraldine Tops. I'm the acting chief director, provincial and local liaison, GCIS.
I'm going to give over. I think we're going to start with GCIS first. While we're looking for the documents.
And
DLC of Register. Before I'm going to allow you, I must deal with our colleagues. I must say, in future, please make sure that the documents are on time. Because we are not going to be so nice next time. Because I don't want, because we don't hardly have time. The program is packed to, for you to send you back to I received some apologies. I don't know if there is any from the minister's side.
Yes.
Okay.
We have an apology from honorable minister. She's attending a cabinet meeting. And also the deputy minister is on study leave.
Those are the apologies. One for the minister. She's attending cabinet meeting, and the deputy minister is on study leave. Also received an apology from Honorable Anita, Smith and Julius. Thank you very much. Can we proceed with the presentation, please? Is there something that you want to say? Thank you very much. Can you proceed, sir? I don't know who is going to do the presentation, but we can proceed with the presentation if you are ready.
Okay, good morning, honorable members and my colleagues from the two departments. My name, like I said, is Kitumitse Makane. I am the Chief Director of Human Resources, and I've already tendered the apologies for our acting DG. There is also another acting DG, Ms. Tasnim Karim, who should have been here. I don't know whether she's still on her way, because we thought our presentations, we will do various sections, but we'll see as we go on as to how we can deal with them. I'm going to do a broad overview as an introduction of our presentation, and then from there, various sections will be presented by people who are responsible for them, and thereafter we will take questions and see how we proceed. Our 2017-18-2019-20 annual performance plan has been compiled in the presentation that you see on the projector. The presentation is outlined as follows. We have a strategic overview, the constitutional and legislative mandate, the strategy map, situational analysis as we saw it, and we will also present to you the GCIS structure and zoom into 2017-20 targets per program, 2017-20 strategic risks, as well as the MTEF budget summary, and then we'll get to the conclusion. As we are all aware, I think I won't dwell much into the legislative issues, but the constitutional mandate of GCIS is derived from Section 195 of the Constitution. The public should be provided with timely, accurate, and accessible information, and it's on those bases that we are in existence, and we make sure that we do that to the public. Deepen democracy and sustain nation building and patriotism by ensuring that the citizenry is informed about government programs and that they are able to influence and participate in such programs. And another one is we are looking into the Constitution and saying in 1998 the South African Communication Service was dissolved and the GCIS established by Cabinet, largely on the basis of recommendations contained in the report of the task group on government communication. And that is what formed the current GCIS and what gives its direction. In terms of legislative mandate, we are governed by the Public Finance Management Act, Section 41 of Cooperative Governance Values, Section 195 of Basic Values and Principles Governing Public Administration, and Section 231 of International Agreements, the Medium-Term Strategic Framework 2014-2019, and Framework for Developing Strategic and Annual Performance Plans. This gives us the directive and the direction as to how we should conduct our business. And our mandate, which is well known to all of us, is to provide strategic leadership
and coordination of a government communication system that ensures that the public is informed and has access to government programs and policies that benefit them. Our vision is also indicated that the pulse of communication, excellence in government, and the mission and the core values that guide us. I'm not going to go through them one by one. Our goal, we have to maintain and strengthen a well-functioning communication system that proactively informs and engages the public. Professionalize the communication system by building a reliable knowledge base through communication products and have a responsive, cost-effective, compliant, and business-focused organization. And the third layer, which we are saying are the enablers, is to align leadership talent to drive execution of corporate strategy, information readiness, which is access to relevant, timely, and quality information, which is informed basically by, basically by the Constitution, as I've said earlier on. And performance excellence culture that we are cultivating in the department is to align department performance to corporate strategy. Core business communication strategy is our business that we are developing for the entire communication system. Campaign management, whenever there are campaigns that entail communication in government, that is what we do. And content development in terms of our various products, that is what we do. And we do it by enhancing system communication effectiveness and accountability. I'm sure the products that we are producing are familiar to you and many of you have seen them. The strategic objectives, we've got quite a number of them, which we say we provide adequate and effective corporate services functions in pursuit of good governance that is on the support side of the functions of the department, and produce government's communication products and services to grow the share of voice of government messages in the public arena. We also implement proactive and reactive media engagement system by building, maintaining, and improving relations with the media and drive the government communication. We improve interdepartmental coordination by joint planning and sharing of messages across the three spheres of government to ensure coherence and alignment of government messages. Our ultimate aim is to have an informed and empowered citizenry on government's policies, plans, programs, and achievements to increase public participation in government. And on this strategic objective, basically we are saying, with the information that we are disseminating, we want the public to make decisions that are informed, that will enable them to change their lives. And lastly, we provide efficient and effective communication services. And in the middle of everything, we provide strategic leadership and support in government communication through public opinion research and analysis of media coverage to understand the communication environment and information government messages. I think through our, when we get to that presentation where we have a branch that deals with research, we'll be able to understand exactly what you mean by that. When we do the situational analysis, this is what comes to into the picture. We say the challenges that we are having is limited fiscal resources in constrained budget environment. I think when the CFO does the presentation on the financial issues, you'll get the picture very clearly, which indicates that we have very limited resources in terms of the budgets that the budget that is very meager. But we try to do most with the least that we have. Increased demand for government communication in a dynamic democracy. When we assess ourselves, we realize that us being the center of government communication, various departments, many of them come to us for assistance to say, can you assist us in this in terms of our communication endeavors? But we are unable to meet all those demands because of limited fiscal resources and personnel. Contested communication environment, I think it is a known fact that as a media component or a media entity, there are many voices in the media landscape, and we have to compete with those media voices, because there are various viewpoints about government, and the unfortunate part of it is that we are a government voice, and there are many criticisms that come from the media landscape, but we've got to compete with those people and counteract what they are saying, which is very challenging. And another one is public perception of government performance. It's a well-known thing that government will not satisfy everybody. The least or the little that government is doing, people will not be satisfied, all of them. So we have to make sure that we change this perception which the public is having, to say government is not doing what it is supposed to do. That is the challenge that we are having. Looking at all these challenges, we sat down and said, but how can we counteract this? What can we do in order to make sure that we meet these challenges? We saying we look at reprioritization and improved efficiency from other departmental resources for priority interventions. This we do by meeting with the government departments, looking at their budgets, and making sure that they assist us in one way or another, making sure that we meet our priorities. We re-evaluate government communication approach, platform, and language mix. I think when we get to one of the programs there, one of the branches, you will see how we have reworked and rechecked our approach in order to make sure that our products are increased and the reach is improved. We have a publication that is called Vuvuzenzele, and we increased that newspaper reach because we realized that the circulation was too limited, and we instead of releasing it on a monthly basis, we have decided that we are going to do it. We were releasing it every second month. Now we are releasing it on a monthly basis. We also looked into presenting government programs timelessly and transparently to citizens so that our communication is not delayed. People receive it while it's still fresh and make sure that it captures their imagination. And lastly, communicate honestly what government has achieved. We realize that it will be of no use if we can look into saying government has done this when actually it has not achieved. We've got to communicate and also indicate the challenges that we are having in terms of service delivery, because it will always it's not going to be always possible for government to provide 100% services where we are lacking, and where there are problems, we need to be able to communicate that. The GCIS structure, we have the minister there, who is the current one, Ms. Ayanda Lolo, as you see, and then deputy minister, and the department is headed by the director general. We have not yet updated this presentation because the time when we submitted it to you, Mr. Donald Dipoko was still acting. But as from this week, Monday, that's when Ms. Pumla Williams was appointed. So you'll pardon us for that indication. And then we have three branches, which is Deputy Director General Content Processing. The presentation will be done, then you'll hear exactly what it does. And Deputy Director General Intergovernmental Coordination and Stakeholder Management, we have a presentation on that in terms of the document that we have. And Deputy Director General Corporate Services, this is the support service that we have. And I'm sure I have to indicate right from the beginning that you'll see there are a number of vacant positions, number of acting people. This is what we went through for the past 2 years. But I think with the coming of the new minister, she has made a commitment that we have to make sure that we fill those positions. And 2 weeks ago, we have advertised them. And in the next 2 months, I think we shall have done justice to that, making sure that we fill these senior positions. I will also present program one, which is the support program. And then I will ask Ms. Geraldine will do the other programs, but the other one, we'll see how we look at it. The This program is the program that deals with administration, and the strategic objective thereof is to provide adequate and effective corporate services functions in pursuit of good governance and the performance indicator. We have strategic management processes and procedures implemented, and we've indicated that the targets there for 2017 and 2020. Our APP must be tabled in Parliament according to prescribed legislation. Four approved quarterly performance reports must be submitted to National Treasury, DPME, and Executive Authority according to prescribed legislation. And departmental annual report must be tabled in Parliament within National Treasury guidelines and legislative time frames. The four progress reports on the implementation of the enterprise risk management framework must also be produced. This is a chief directorate that deals with strategic management in this branch. We also have in this branch a chief directorate that deals with IMT, IMNT governance, which is our IT unit. And this, in terms of our targets for 2017-20, we're saying four reports on the availability of IT infrastructure will be presented to the steering committee for that unit, and four reports on IM systems will be developed and presented to the IMT committee. All this we do in order to make sure that when we give these reports, we are presenting to this team and even to the DPSA our activities and our plans to make sure that we are in line with the IMT strategy that has been prescribed and has been set for the department. And another unit in this branch of administration is our finance, which we are saying the performance indicator for the period is that annual financial statements prepared and issued within legislated prescripts. And our targets is annual financial statements prepared, and we must make sure that all the time when they are due to Treasury, they are presented on time. Performance, compliance, and financial audit conducted, updated risk-based internal audit plan, and 2017-18 operational plans approved. This is to ensure that our internal audit unit is really putting us on checks and balances. And I must pause, or I must hasten to say, for the past 3 years, because of the role of this finance and internal audit unit, we have been getting clean audits. And the last one in this administration is the human resources management unit. And we are seeing our performance indicator there, the MTF human resources plan, which is HRP, must be implemented. In this plan, we are outlining all our strategies and all our indications regarding the management of human resources. And all areas of human resources are covered, and we make sure that it is implemented. And our targets is annual adjusted HRP and HRP implementation report submitted to DPSA on time. We do submit and we get an evaluation from DPSA, and they indicate to us where we are lacking, and they also indicate areas of improvement. I think at this stage I will pause and hand over to, is it Geraldine?
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'm Geraldine Tops. I will present Program 3. I will present on behalf of Mr. Michael Curran, the Acting DTG for Intergovernmental Coordination and Stakeholder Management. The purpose of Program 3 is to implement developed communication through mediated and unmediated communication channels and foster sound stakeholder relations and partnerships. This program got three sub-programs, which is media engagement, cluster communication, and provincial and local liaison. The first sub-program, media engagement, the strategic objective is to implement a proactive and reactive media engagement system by building, maintaining and improving relations with the media and drive the government communications agenda. The performance indicator is the number of engagements between government officials and senior journalists on the government program of action and policy issue held. And the target for this indicator is 16 engagements between government officials and senior journalists on the government program of action and the policy issues held per year. The second performance indicator is the number on post-cabinet media briefings and all statements issued after ordinary cabinet meetings. Our target for 2017 is 17 post-cabinet media briefings and or other statements issued after the ordinary cabinet meetings. And then the third one is the number of bi-weekly rapid response reports for the minister produced. 24 bi-weekly rapid response will be produced on media. This is for media engagement. The second sub-program is cluster communication. And the strategic objective is to improve the interdepartmental coordination by joint planning and sharing of messages across the three spheres of government to ensure coherence and alignment of government messages. The first performance indicator is the number of cluster communication plans developed, and the target is 5 cluster communication plans developed for the year 2017-18. Number of reports on the implementation of the cluster communication program plans, 50 reports will be developed on the implementation of this cluster communication plan. Number of internal communicators forums held, the plan is to have 10 internal communications for the year. Number of reports on government communication training produced, 4 reports on government communication training produced for the year. A number of engagement with the HOCs held, 4 engagements is planned for the head of communicators for the year. The third program, sub-program, is provincial and local liaison, and the strategic objective are an informed and empowered citizenry on government policies, plans, programs, and achievements to increase public participation in government. And the main purpose of this program is also to ensure that a national communication strategy is presented to provinces for alignment. And this program also promotes the Tusong program, and we also coordinate the Imbizo program. The first performance indicator is the number of reports on support to the function of the government communication system produced. And the target is 4 reports on support to the functioning of government communication system. Just to share with the honourable members, is under this performance indicators, this is where our provincial officers will share the national communication messages to all our provincial structures and local municipality structures, communication forums. We also participate in all our communication forums on a district and local municipality level. And we also provide support to our municipalities to assist them with the development of communication strategies. We assist them with the establishment of new communication structures, and we also help with capacity building for new councillors or new communicators in the municipalities or in government. Our second indicator is the number of development communication activations aligned to the government communication program. Our plan is 1,200 development communication activations aligned to the government communication program. And this is also all the communication activations that has been implemented in our provincial office, in our provinces, districts, and local municipalities. And this is one of the platforms that we use to inform our communities about government program and achievements. And we do this communication activations through different platforms where we use community radio, we use Teximol activation, dialogues, and also seminars. Number of marketing events for Tusong Program Help. We ensure that we market all the functional Tusong service centers to make sure that people have access to government information and also services. And through this Tusong service programs, we also marketed the integrated mobiles that has been running in provinces, and GISA has supported the departments with that. Then we've got a number of community and stakeholder liaison visits undertaken.
Our communicators are going into our district and local municipalities where they will have stakeholder liaison visits with different stakeholders, the CDWs, business, government departments, traditional leaders. And during the stakeholder visits, we also do communication plans and we also do environmental assessments where we will report back what is happening in the local municipalities. Number of reports on Imbizo's health, we will produce 4 quarterly reports on the Imbizo events health. And like I said, we coordinate the Imbizo program for government where we will have 2 national Imbizo focus weeks for the year. And we will also give preference to the president, the deputy president in Imbizo, the minister of communication and deputy minister, and then all key ministers. This is aligned to the key priorities of government and our district mayors. We also support mayors and MECs in provinces on the Imbizos. And our last one is the number of electronic My District Today newsletter published. And the My District Today is a newsletter where we share the good news stories of government. And the target for 2017 is 44 electronic My District Today newsletters that will be published and shared with through our electronic database in all the across the country. Thanks, Jacob.
Thanks very much. Then we will do program 2. Thereafter, we will present to you the strategic risks, which will then conclude our presentation with the financial indicators. As I indicated when I outlined the structure, I said we had three branches, and I've done the corporate services branch, she has done the other branch, which is a cluster communication thing. Now the program 2 is what we call content processing and dissemination, and the purpose thereof is to provide strategic leadership in government, like I've already indicated. Now, in terms of this program, they've got a unit which is called products and platforms, and the performance indicator there is a number of editions of Vukuzenzele published, the newspaper that I referred to, which I said previously we were doing it every second month, but we have decided that in order to address the challenges that we have indicated, we are doing it every month. And then for 2017 up to 2020, we are going to have 21 editions published. Number of editions of public sector magazine also published. We are going to have 11 editions. This magazine is basically covering all the issues that relate to government, and it ensures that everything that is done in terms of governance and in terms of the programs of government are indicated and are discussed there, and we are able to communicate it with that. And another thing that we can indicate in this program, which is related to this magazine as well as the Vukuzenzele, is that when we launched it, we used to have money and it was even outsourced. But as we speak right now, it is self-funding because we place government adverts in it, and then the departments pay us money. Then with the money that we get, the revenue that we get there, we are able to increase the circulation and increase what is getting there. That is one milestone that we have achieved in the previous 2 years, because we were struggling in because of limited funds. We were struggling in order to get it reaching the wider population. And then another issue that the SA performance indicator in this program is that an online edition of 2016-2017 South African Yearbook and Pocket Guide to South Africa published annually. Online edition for this publication, which is South African Yearbook as well as Pocket Guide, will be published annually. And I think members are aware of the book. We always make it available. And in this book, all government departments, programs, and achievements and challenges are indicated, and we are able to communicate with people locally, even internationally, because because it is made available to all the public. And percentage of language services requested completed as an indicator, then we say 100% language services requested completed. As a communication department, we do get requests from other government departments where they want us to do their translations. We know we've got 11 official languages, and whenever they've got a publication and they want to translate it into another, into or any language that they want, they do come to us, and we are able to provide that service by offering them those translation services. Another chief directorate in this branch is what we call products and platform, like I've already indicated. And performance indicator is that news updates on key government programs and activities, excluding public holidays, weekends, and holidays periods. It's done. We look into that. I'm sure all of you are aware of our SA News, which we brand as sanews.gov.za. Here we look at all the events and all the happenings that relate to government, and we put them there. And then those we do on a daily basis, annually. And then updated content on the website of government, which is www.gov.za. And these updates are done on a continual basis on behalf of all other government departments, and we make sure that we do it regularly. Number of reports on social media accounts, performance as per weekly content plans. We are aware, the platform, social media, is dominating the public and dominating the communication environment. So we are very active in that, and we make sure that on a continuous basis we participate and we disseminate our information there. Then we have a chief directorate in the branch that deals with policy and research. And their performance indicator there is a number of cluster reports on perceptions of government priorities produced. And we are saying 10 cluster reports should be produced. And this must be done on an annual basis and throughout the year. Number of pulse of the nation reports produced based on their approach of making sure that they assess the mood of the public. They conduct research, and they indicate as to what the public is feeling. And this informs our communication and our communication endeavors as we advise other government departments. A number of reports on government communication monitoring and evaluation produced. 2 reports will be done on an annual basis. In that way, we are able to can monitor as to what is happening in terms of the communication landscape. And instead of always trying to be proactive, we are able to address even other things that we were not aware of once we have monitored and evaluated. Number of media content analysis reports produced, we will do 2 of them in the periods that are coming, 2017 and 20. And percentage of key messages produced, 100% of key messages as requested. I think whenever there is an event in government, we get into contact with other government departments, whether it is Home Affairs or anyone. And then, like, for example, we just had the World Economic Forum that was taking place. We had to come and sit down and say, what messages are we going to produce during this period to make sure that people are informed and people are communicated with. So every time, whenever there is such an event or there is something, we make sure that we coin messages and we send them to all to the politicians, so that whenever they are addressing the public, they make use of those messages, and that is what we do. And a publication of the media landscape produced, this we do on an annual basis, and we are going to have one of them in that period that we have indicated. And the last chief directorate in this branch is what we call Communication Service Agency. We are saying, as an indicator, a number of approved media buying campaigns implemented, and looking at the number for that as a target is 250 approved media buying campaigns. I think this is one of the things that we have decided to do as a department, to make sure that we make government departments benefit a lot out of this media buying. Instead of them approaching the media houses directly, they come through GCIS and we place those medias for them, number of photographic services provided, 400 photographic services provided, and these are the the photographs that are needed by a number of politicians, by a number of the various departments whenever they've got events where they would like to communicate with people. We do that. A number of video services also we are looking at plus minus 520. We have a radio service that we have in this chief directorate, and we are seeing 500 radio products and services provided. This mainly is dominated by community radio stations where we are able to link various politicians with various radio stations in order to make sure that people get the direct message and the direct voice from our politicians to make sure that we are effective. I think that that is the conclusion of that area of video products. We have a number of graphic designs completed, 400 of them. We are saying we will do them, and percentage of approved marketing services activities implemented, 100% for approved marketing services requested as and when it is necessary. A number of GCIS print products distributed. These are the product that we produce in-house. I've already talked about the Bookies and Seller, the Pocket Guide South Africa, as well as the GCIS annual report. We do them in-house, and we are able to produce them. I'm going to ask Ms. Karabo to do the risk presentation to you, and then from there we'll get to the financial area. Over to you, Karabo.
Thank you, honorable members. The department conducted a risk assessment and identified four strategic risks that could lead to them not achieving its strategic objectives or not delivering on its mandate. The first one that was identified was inability to provide relevant information to targeted audiences. So we also reflected on the root causes and identified that content not supplied timelessly to GCIS by departments, limited resources within other government departments as well as GCIS itself, products and platforms not aligned to target audiences, and limited use of platforms. The treatment plans or mitigation plans, we identified segmented approach to all the audiences. So our research has done a segmentation model so that they can reach each and every audiences within their preferred mediums or communication mediums. Effective use of GCIS products and platforms by other government departments, collaboration with other government departments on communication campaigns, and monthly content hub held within the department to develop quarterly plans. The other risk identified was inability to lead and influence in the communication environment, particularly timelessly. The root causes identified was ineffective cluster system, lack of capacity, non-responsiveness, and uncooperative responses of government programs, inefficient coordination within the government communication system, and lack of timeliness and relevant content from client departments. The treatment plans was the daily rapid response and opinion pieces and key messages that are normally developed by the department, and development communication, strengthening cluster coordination and localization of content. The fourth strategic risk was inability to attract human capital that is responsive to changing environment, and the root causes identified were ineffective HR policies and procedures within the department, regulation restrictions, poor implementation of plans and strategies, poor performance management, and ineffective recruitment practices. The treatment plans identified were the effective implementation of HR policies and plans, recruitment of skilled personnel within GCIS, training and development programs implemented, assessment of qualifications and criminal records of recruited staff by SSA and NIA. The last one, failure to effectively support the execution of GCIS mandate, and the root cause mainly there was limited resources within the department. The treatment plan, effective implementation of corporate governance policies, strategies, and plans, including ICT governance, provide assurance in the system of internal control and development of compliant strategic annual performance and operational plans within the department. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Karabo. Then we will hand over to the CFO for budget issues.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of Parliament. I take this opportunity to greet all the acting DGs and ladies and gentlemen, colleagues. The story is the story that we all know, the story of finances, the story that since the economic downturn global of 2008, the economies of the countries have struggled to recover. We continue to feel the effects of that. And GCIS in particular feels the effects of that, more especially that we are more of an administrative department. Our work may not necessarily be seen, even though it is, may not necessarily be seen as, you know, affecting the men in the street, but indeed it does. We have a budget of 404 million to the nearest 405 million, and this comes from the total budget of the country of 1.6 trillion. So we, our share is 405 million, divided into various expenditures and classifications. You will see that our current payments, which are quite inclusive of goods and services and salaries budget, we are a department that is quite labor-oriented. We've got a lot of, our work is to communicate, so it's people that can communicate. So the majority of our budget, you'll see that it's under compensation of employees. We also do some significant work in care costs, to have those services supported. And we've got regional offices, we've got provincial offices throughout the country, and we also have a building which we use to beam our messages and communicate to all South Africans. And this is for all the departments, all ministers, all political heads, including the president and the deputy president. So our budget basically is 405 million, as I've indicated. You will see that we virtually do not have budget for transfers. The picture remains over the MTF, starting with the base year of 2017-2018. Administration has got 154 million with program 240 million, as well as the InterGov branch having 110 million. And you will see consistently that the majority of the costs are variable, as well as administration. If we go to the next slide, it is still the total budget of the department, but you'll assist me. Thank you. But then it tells the story that I've just explained. From a budget of 404, we've got 237 million, which is compensation throughout the entire department. Goods and services, 167 million. Please be mindful that some of the costs are mandatory costs. Some of them are in terms of the legislation and transfers. We visually do not have transfers. These are costs that we basically pay, number one, to SABC when we pay our licenses. They have been changed in the past in terms of the square definitions to include normal television licenses as transfers. And lastly, under transfers, we also do pay leave gratuity for staff that resigns out of the public service and we have to encash their days. So we pay that from that transfer. So visually we do not have transfers. The next slide, which is the slide that basically breaks down the budget of administration. Corporate services might appear quite top-heavy there, but I wish to indicate that you can see 154 million. All the rentals of the buildings are paid from that program. We are basically a support-based organization, branch, and ours is to enable the communicators to do the work that they have to do. I also wish to indicate that a significant portion of the corporate services budget has to do with monies that we pay over to CEDA to link us on bus, on personal, on lodges, and those costs are quite significant. So, and they're mandatory to all the departments. But what makes it even worse with our department is that we always have to link between Cape Town as well as Pretoria, because we communicate from both from these two main centres. And you can see office accommodation is quite significant. I wish to indicate that although National Treasury has projected that the inflation will be increasing in 2018 by 5.7. We continue and consistently so have had our accommodation rentals increasing at an average of 9%. Effectively, what that means is that our budget is shrinking because it is not necessarily protected. The inflation was not protected at the correct inflation rate. So we will continue to cover less than what we have been covering in the future years. If we go to program one again, let's go to the next slide. And the next slide is basically program two. We've got the significant part of it, you'll see that is under research and policy. We've got tracker contracts that are actually, that we have with various institutions, and we continue to share the research products from those trackers with the entire government. And it's quite significant, it's quite important that we need to have a sense of what is actually happening out there. Product and platforms, these are the products that we basically spend on to communicate to South Africans. The significant part of it there, you will be having the Vuk'uzenzele and as well as SAP yearbook. So that one is quite goods and services oriented, but we also have to pay salaries for the people that do the writing. And we've got the CSA, and those are, and you can see that the budget is consistently increasing at a moderate rate, even though that rate is quite lower than what we are expecting it to increase. I must indicate that, Honorable Chair, that we are not necessarily complaining. We do know that the country is unable to produce or generate the revenue that is required. But I think it's quite important that we need to flag this. I need to indicate, Honorable Chair, that as part of our reprioritization exercise, we even had to go to an extent of combining December and January Vuk'uzenzele publication. So instead of publicizing it 12 times in 1 year, we had to find creative means, because we know that generally in December people are busy and in January it's not necessarily much of a full month. So we had to find creative ways of doing it. Ntate Simakane has made mention that we've also had to find creative ways of funding Vuk'uzenzele and Public Service Magazine, whereby we find a participatory way, inviting people to assist in that, without necessarily making a dent on the fiscus. If we go to The next slide, I'm quickly going to jump to program three. The other presentation is just a standard classification, and I've already spoken to that, so I'm not going to waste your time in that regard. We then have PLL. Our PLL program three, you will see that it's PLL heavy. If you go to PLL, this is where we've got all the provincial offices, regional offices, and you will notice that it's also human. And we pay salaries there because we need to have those communicators to continue to disseminate the information. The increases are mainly informed over the MTF, informed to a large extent by the collective bargaining agreements. Salaries are indeed protected in that area, inflation-wise. And it is the very same story that we will continue to share with you. In conclusion, having mentioned that, GCIS continues to achieve its planned objectives, and they do so respecting South Africans, respecting the taxpayers' money. We are this kind of a department that will produce with the limited resources, but make sure that really wastefulness does not happen in our department. We've got a very strict system of wastefulness, to manage wastefulness and fruitless expenditure committees, whereby if it goes to an extent whereby a laptop is lost, and that committee will look into that matter, and they will basically look at the circumstances, how that laptop was stolen. If the committee is of the opinion that the staff member did not exercise due care to protect the asset of the state, as it is indicated in Section 45 of the PFMA, we are going to recover the money from the staff, and it has happened. And that's why we believe that we are quite prudent and we use these funds effectively and efficiently. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, I think that is how we conclude our presentation, and honorable members, thanks very much for listening to us.
Thank you very much, DG. Can we proceed with the next presentation of DOC? Please, over to you, ma'am. My presentation will cover various areas, but you know, since we have done the introductions, I'm not going to do that.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to ask you, not to go into that.
Yes, I'm not going to do that.
Right into the presentation.
Yes. It will also focus on various areas, being the planning process that we have followed, the situational analysis or the key issues, you know, that would affect our work or the environment in which we are operating. It will also cover the mandate, the strategic outcome-oriented goals and objectives,
the deliverables that we'll be implementing in various provinces, our commitments from 2017-18 and the outer years, the macro organizational structure and our staff establishment, and our budget allocation for the 2017 and the outer years. I think this is the background that most of you could be familiar with. Our strat plan is premised on key government priorities and informed by the NDP and the MTSF, which repositions us as far as, you know, our core mandate and the outcome that guides our work is concerned, that is nation building and social cohesion. The department reviewed the annual plan to reflect the current service delivery and organizational environment, and we finalized it in August last year. The next slide, honorable members, reflects the processes that we have followed in terms of finalizing our plan, and we have consulted and followed the framework to the latter. I'll start with the situational analysis. As we are all aware that, you know, we are now in the digital era, you know, of communication, that is the environment has changed significantly. I'll start with the digital migration that informs most of the work that we are doing and its impact, you know, in other areas. In December 2015, we commenced with this particular project. And in this particular project, honorable members, we've got various role players that are involved in, although we did not go into detail to talk about them, but we started, you know, with a project which was in the then, you know, Department of Telecoms, and it was handed over to us in 2015. And at the time that it was handed over, honorable members, for your information, is that it was actually the year that, you know, the country was also expected, you know, to switch off and the analog transmitters, and we missed that particular deadline. And again, for your information, when this project was transferred from the old Department of Communications, which now today we call it the Post and Telecoms, it was not transferred with the budget and also its liabilities. So we received some of the employees that were managing the project, but, you know, they were not actually, their budgets were not transferred, and even the operational budget for the project was not done. To date, we have done monitoring visits, you know, in the Northern Cape, because when the project started, we had three phases. The first phase was to deal with the SK area. The second phase is to deal with the borderline, you know, areas. And the last phase was to deal with the normal, you know, provinces, which is mainly, you know, Gauteng and the Western Cape, which are not really affected by borderline areas. We have also done the monitoring visits in this particular area. And at the time that we did, I think this is a historical slide that, you know, we had a lot of challenges that we picked up in the process. One of that was the impact of TV license as a requirement for registration. That is, for you to obtain or to receive a subsidized set-top box, you also had to get the TV licenses. The other challenge that we have was the unavailability of smart cards for the direct-to-home or satellite set-top boxes. The third kind of challenge that we have was the lack of education or awareness or knowledge about what this project is all about and what are the benefits. And as a result, the Minister of Communications took a decision together with the SABC, you know, to de-link the TV license from the registration process, which has improved the uptake and the registration process, but we are going now to gazette so that, you know, we regularize, you know, this particular matter. And then, as I stated earlier, this project is implemented by various entities with the Universal Service and Access Agency that is responsible, you know, for the procurement of, you know, the set-top boxes and its accessories. We've got the South African office, Post Office, which is also responsible for the logistics and registration. We've also got Centec that is responsible for the signal distribution, and the South African Broadcasting Corporation that is also participating as one of our agencies, you know, in implementing this particular project. And then when you look at some of the key, you know, entities, they are actually falling within the Ministry of Post and Telecoms. And at the time that we prepared this presentation, over 800,000 set-top boxes were and kits were manufactured. But however, to date, we are sitting, you know, above that number. With regards to the, you know, digital migration, we have now switched off, you know, the transmitters in the Northern Cape in those particular municipalities, but we have not switched off all the transmitters because of we also need to focus on some of the people that do not ultimately benefit from the subsidized boxes, but, you know, they will still have to get them through the retail markets. We have made considerable progress in terms of this particular area, and we have commenced, you know, in other provinces with registration. That is the Mpumalanga, Free State, Limpopo, and to date, with including KwaZulu-Natal. However, we still have challenges around funding for this particular project to continue with public awareness, and the fact that we do not have a contact or some well-known as the call center, that still remains a huge challenge, you know, in the implementation of the project, because of we need to reach, you know, all the poor households that needs to benefit, you know, from this particular project through one-on-one interactions. We also has got a need in terms of training qualified installers. This comes about with the fact that, you know, the procurement and the appointment of service providers, you know, that responsibility lies with USASA. And to date, one of the challenges that we have is that, you know, the installers that have been appointed, they're mainly based in the Gauteng province. So if you need, you know, assistance in a rural area, that becomes really a challenge. So we've entered into a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Public Works that would train, you know, the community development workers so that in each municipality or in each particular area, we've got, you know, young people that will be, you know, dealing with all technical challenges that our communities could be facing. Honorable members, we have been having this so-called, you know, the broadcasting or policies that over the two decades have been focusing on the analog, you know, era. And now with the digital content, we had to ultimately ensure that, you know, whatever policies that we have are reviewed so that, you know, they will deal with some of the challenges, or they will ultimately prepare the country moving into the digital era smoothly. And one of those issues is the audiovisual digital content white paper that we have started, you know, to, or that we have now started to draft. And this is informed by the fact that, you know, globally, you know, the market structure is dominated by large companies, and that does not allow, you know, new players to come in, because of the large companies normally lower their cost of production, whilst, you know, the smaller players are actually not ready to enter the market. And we have also found out that, you know, this ultimately create unfair competition, as the SMMEs cannot compete fairly due to lack of access to the value chain. And then the strategy that we are developing will ensure also that, you know, we facilitate, you know, ownership and also to new audio digital, you know, content owners, so that, you know, the previous disadvantaged communities and SMMEs, you know, can participate in this particular sector. Government encourages industry also to promote transformation and equitable ownership on the new audio visual digital content value chain. At the moment, even if we migrate and we move into the new era digitally, if we do not have local content, then digital migration becomes, you know, a very useless kind of transformation, because of when we free spectrum, we'll need a lot of, you know, content that needs to be produced. The South African audiovisual sector continues to have a ripple effect where in adjacent industries such as tourism, hospitality, and equipment vendors will also benefit in this value chain. The South African audiovisual content sector must also fulfill democratic, cultural, social, and economic needs of its citizens, as we have got limited content that focuses on various areas as per our commitment in the digital migration strategy. The audiovisual and digital content strategy will increase content output, will also make sure that or include the rural communities or enable them, you know, to participate and SMMEs in the production cycle, will also lower the barriers of entry to the content development sector, will also improve on e-literacy skills, the funding schemes, marketing and exportation of the South African audiovisual digital content. These measures, we believe that, you know, they'll build a sustainable audiovisual industry which must contribute to economic growth and cultural expression of the people of South Africa. With regards to the media industry, although we have made several progress in this particular area, but again there are still challenges in this in the print media, and we need also to transform the media as per Section 16 of the Constitution, which reflects these freedoms that, you know, everyone has a right to freedom of expression. We have last year convened a colloquium which mainly focuses on various matters that would need, you know, all role players, you know, to engage on. And part of what we were focusing on was to ensure that, you know, the environment is open, accessible, and democratic and diverse. So what we did last year was to convene a what we called a colloquium, but not really to ensure that, not really for government, you know, to control the media, but wanted to engage with all role players so that, you know, we can deal with some of the matters that have not been dealt with since 1994. For instance, the ownership, you know, of these print media remain largely untransformed, and we do not have even plurality of views, that, you know, we don't have alternative views to the media, and more especially that, you know, the poor and the most disadvantaged still remain, you know, largely unheard, you know, in the media environment. So this colloquium was held in August 2016 last year. We will, by the end of this month, you know, present a position paper on what we have engaged on and what the position of government is. And that will also inform us as to whether we need to regulate or we need to engage more. So that position paper or the outcomes of that colloquium will inform what needs to be done in terms of, you know, media transformation and diversity in the sector. Honorable members, part of what we do is to support, you know, community broadcasting. And with regards to the broadcasting, the community broadcasting sector, this sector was initiated in 1998, and since then, the focus of the support was mainly around, you know, the infrastructure, signal distribution, and subsidy and capacity building. But as and when we, the media sector or the communication sector, you know, transforms, then it tells us that, you know, we need not to have a one-size-fits-all for all the community broadcasting area, because of they've got different needs. And again, the matter that, you know, now the
the CENTEC is actually one of the signal is the only signal distribution, you know, entity that is still lying with the DTPS. With the underfunding that we have, we are unable, you know, to assist community broadcasting with regards to signal distribution subsidies, which is another challenge that this sector is currently facing. And then we also looking at how do we transform, you know, this sector by actually providing, you know, a sort of an informed strategy or support, you know, in this particular area. And this is what, you know, the support broadcasting, the community broadcast support scheme will be focusing on. And then this support strategy will capture all the problems and future challenges identified by stakeholders and determine the activities to be supported for community broadcasting. And one of the challenges that we are today we are seeing in this particular sector is as government has committed to roll out at least one radio and station in every district, municipality, and one community TV per province. We've got a challenge of governance and even the role and the divergent roles as far as what is it that the community radio stations will be doing. For instance, you'll find that in the municipality, they'll provide space. And then when there are issues around service delivery, protests, you know, the radio stations, when they enter that fray, then they become, you know, they create conflict with municipalities. Then you'll find that the municipalities will chase them out. But because of, again, depending on who assisted them, you know, in terms of securing the license, you know, you'll find that, you know, now there's political interference, you know, there is also issues of governance. And also when they split, some of the people believe that, you know, the remaining ones or whoever applied for the license will have to take, you know, the infrastructure with them. So, again, that is one of the challenges that we have. The second challenge is, although there is an increased government spend on community radio by the GCIS, part of the problem that we have is governance, that, you know, some of these people, they'll render the services to government, but when we are supposed to pay them, we can't because of they don't even have either bank accounts or they don't have, you know, proper documents that are required, you know, by the National Treasury. So we keep on now having a lot of challenges around this area. Hence, this strategy will ultimately focus on, you know, supporting the community media based on the needs that they are faced with, because of if we do not do that, then sustainability of these radio stations will ultimately be a threat. With regards to our mandate, our vision is that vibrant and sustainable communication services for an informed citizenry and positive image of South Africa. Our mandate has not changed as far as also our mission is concerned. It stays the same, that is, create an enabling environment for the provision of inclusive communication services to all South Africans in a manner that promotes socio-economic development and investment through broadcasting, new media, print media, and other new technologies and brand the country locally, regionally, and internationally. We will do our work through the values, and the most important one is about creating certainty of the policy environment. We'll also be people-centered, quality standards of products and services, integrity, responsiveness, and innovation. We have set ourselves the following strategic goals. The first one is effective and efficient strategic leadership, governance, as well as administration. The second one is a responsive communications policy regulatory environment and improved country branding. And the last one is transformed communication sector. In implementing our mandate, we will achieve this through these four strategies. The first one is around developing and reviewing communications and broadcasting policies and legislation to ensure growth and development of the communication sector. We'll also improve communication systems in order to inform and disseminate information to the public and marketing the country abroad. will also strengthen capacity of the department and that of its state-owned companies to effectively deliver on their public mandates. We'll also broaden participation in the communications and broadcasting sectors to promote economic development and transformation. Honorable members, when you look at these strategies, we strive to achieve this, but you know, with the current funding of the department, some of these mandates might not be implemented, you know, in the coming years, as you know, the department is underfunded. But with the little resources that we have, we're trying our best to ensure that, you know, we implement our mandate. The department actually develops and administers, you know, the following legislations: the Films and Publication Act, the Broadcasting Act, the MDDA Act, and the next three, you know, legislations. It's a joint responsibility between ourselves and the Ministry of Post and Telecoms, and we also are guided by the World Intellectual Property Organization. We also, you know, comply with the public service legislation, that is the Public Service Act, the Public Finance Management Act, and again, we also guided by the International Telecommunications Union, as South Africa is a signatory. With regards to the first goal, that is effective and efficient strategic leadership, governance, and administration, we will continue to ensure compliance with statutory requirements and good governance practices. We'll also improve the capacity of our entities to deliver on our mandate. We'll also ensure that, you know, our entities are actually sustainable. With regards to goal two, that is related to a responsive communications policy, regulatory environment, and improved country branding, we'll strive all the time, you know, to improve universal access to broadcasting services and information to all citizens, and we'll continue to market the country locally, regionally, and internationally to provide an enabling environment for investment by 2019. This strategic objective is mainly implemented, you know, by one of our entities, that is Brand South Africa. The third goal, that of transforming the communication sector, we will support the growth and development of the creative industries. We'll continue to manage the digital migration process or project, and we'll strengthen support, guidance, and interrelations with stakeholders. And this all will be done by 2019. Regarding the work that we'll be doing in the provinces, we'll be conducting consultations on the white paper on the audiovisual and digital content that I spoke to earlier. We'll also continue with the media transformation and diversity policy consultations, and we'll continue to conduct digital terrestrial television programs, and we'll be coordinating them in all the 9 provinces, and we will switch off, you know, 88 borderline towns within the 7 provinces, except for Gauteng and the Western Cape. And also our entities will be implementing various deliverables in the provincial space as and when, you know, there is a need to do so as per their plans, because of they are also committed, or they've committed to outreach programs, and they also support the ministry, you know, in our work of outreach programs or Izimbizo. Honorable members, I'll move now to the programs. I'll start with the administration one, with the goal of effective and efficient strategic leadership, governance, and administration. The department achieved a clean audit, and we hope to maintain the same. And part of what we plan to do under administration this year is to submit our HR plan to the DPSA, and again to implement our human resources strategy, and also reporting to the PCTA, and then we'll continue to do that also in the outer years. Honorable members, we have put this, regardless of the financial challenges that we have, that, you know, we might not be able even to implement, you know, the workplace skills plan and our HR plan, given the funding that we have as a department. But in terms of the framework, we have to commit, you know, to these strategic objectives. As I stated earlier, we will maintain our audit outcome and also on the financial statements, and we'll continue to submit them in terms of or in line with the Office of the Auditor General Standards as well as the National Treasury. In the last financial year, we did not have an asset register, and then we have planned, you know, to prepare one, you know, this year, and we'll continue to implement it. That will be also done in the outer years. The other administrative aspect that we need to comply with is around the procurement plans. Last year we did not have one, but again this year we will be preparing that particular procurement plan. Honorable members, the department still relies largely on the GCIS with regards to the administrative function. That is, we do not have our own internal audit, we don't even have our own risk management, we don't have our own IT, so we largely dependent on the GCIS, you know, to provide such. With regards to risk management, we'll develop a risk management plan, which we did not have in the past financial year, and in the outer years we'll review and implement it. And then with regards to the audit strategic plan, we had one developed last year and approved, and will continue to roll it out this year and the outer years. Still on administration, for this current financial year, we will get the risk-based internal audit annual operational plan with the assistance of the GCIS to be approved. And we will continue to prepare the financial compliance and performance audit against the annual operational plan, which we'll also do in the outer years. I'll now move to what we have committed to do in the core, which is Communications Policy Research and Development Program of the department. As I stated earlier, this year we plan to, get the digital content policy, you know, approved. The white paper, we could not get it approved last year. As and when we engaged, it was submitted through the cabinet committees, but we had to again relook at it and integrate some of the inputs from key departments such as economic development, the small business development, and the DTI, and that has since been done, and we are ready to take it back, you know, to cabinet. And that, because of we did not achieve it last year, now it will put us under much more pressure, you know, to fast-track, you know, the consultation process and finalize the bill by the end of the financial year. With regards to the number of monitoring reports on the implementation of the community broadcast support strategy, this year we plan to have two monitoring reports in terms of compiling the broadcasting infrastructure and signal distribution. These are the main areas that mainly affect, you know, the community broadcasting, you know, sector. We also plan to, this financial year, in terms of the policy or framework in the South African Broadcasting Service Corporation, which is the SABC. We plan to develop a concept paper on the regulatory policy framework of the SABC and submit it to the Minister for approval. And in 2018, we'll ensure that, you know, a draft position paper on the policy framework is submitted to Cabinet for approval, and the regulatory policy framework on the National Public Broadcasting Service Corporation will be finalized or developed by 2019-2020. In transforming the media, as I stated earlier, this year we plan to draft a position paper on media transformation and diversity policy and submit it to the minister. and we hope that, you know, the policy will be finally approved by 18-19 and be implemented, you know, in 19-20, given the kind of challenges that we have and the work that still needs to be done around the area. We also have got the advisory body that advises the minister on broadcasting matters as regulated in the Broadcasting Act. We planned that, you know, this South African Broadcast Production Advisory Board this year will be focusing on the skills and the funding, you know, around broadcasting matters. And at the end of the financial year, they would have, we expect them to produce two reports around the area. And again, they will be focusing on other areas in the outer years. Under the program three, which is industry and capacity development, this is around the digital migration and stakeholder management. We plan this year to switch off in 88 borderline towns within the seven provinces, and that will be done by the end of the financial year. And then for 18-19, we will be switching off also in the borderline provinces and the inland, you know, provinces, which I stated earlier, and we hope to switch off, you know, by the 18-19. Although we still have got challenges that threaten, you know, this particular project. And then with regards to public awareness, we plan to have 10 Izimbizo, or what we call public awareness campaigns. That is 10 per financial year. That is, we'll do them in the 17-18 and also in the outer years. With regards to the reports, as far as progress is concerned about, you know, access to digital broadcasting, we'll be doing, you know, 4 reports per quarter so that, you know, we are able, you know, to assess our progress and again to troubleshoot where we have to in all the areas. So that will also be doing in the outer years to determine the effectiveness or the impact of the project, you know, per quarter. We also plan to have 10 stakeholder engagements coordinated that will be supporting even the work that we do in the department. And then around the international arena, we will be presenting 2 position papers at multilateral engagement. In WIPO, we'll be focusing on content piracy. And in 2019, as a signatory to the ITU, we'll be focusing on World Radio Communication Conference around spectrum matters. And then we'll do the same in the outer years, although we have not decided yet as to which position papers we will be focusing on. Honorable members, now I'll move to Program 4, which deals with entity oversight that actually takes care of the 5 entities around that are actually in the department as our service delivery arms. For this financial year, we plan to have 1 shareholder compact and 3 accountability instruments signed with the SABC, the Films and Publication Board, the Brand SA, and the MDDA. And we also hope to finalize the performance agreements with the ICASA councillors. In 2016 and 17, we did not conclude the performance agreements with ICASA councillors, and we hope to achieve that by this year, that, you know, we'll have to enforce what is currently in the ICASA Act with regards to the performance of all the entities in line with the relevant, you know, legislation that guides this area of a relationship and the responsibilities of the executive authority and also the entities themselves. Under this area, we are supposed to provide, you know, oversight responsibility to all these entities. We'll continue to facilitate the implementation of our governance policy over the years so as to ensure that, you know, all the entities actually implement their mandate and they account on what they have been funded for. And with regards to the funding request, We have planned this year to align that in terms of the drawdown conditions so that, you know, they are, we have set conditions as to what informs, you know, our transfer to those entities, and they will ultimately have to give us plans and reports before we actually transfer the tranches, you know, to them. We also have got the quarterly reports that, you know, they have to submit to the executive authority on a monthly basis. This we plan in the sense that, you know, all entities will have to submit, you know, their plans to the executive authority before they are submitted even to Parliament, so that we ensure that, you know, the information that is there, it's accurate, it's correct, and it's aligned to what is currently in their plans. So they will be doing that in a quarterly basis. And when you look at the number of entities and you look at the number of quotas that we have, that ultimately informs the 20 there as the number. And then again, we plan that, you know, all the entities will be submitting, you know, their annual oversight reports, and over the years that will continue to do. And again, they will be expected to submit, you know, the reports in terms of the alignment with our departmental priorities to the minister. Last year we planned 10, but the challenge that we have picked up this year was because of mostly the report on processes. So we have just minimized them to 2, so that half yearly they will do, you know, those particular reports, so that we ensure that their work is aligned to that of the department. And then with regards to the other forum in terms of improving governance and alignment of our work, we've got various fora that we meet with these entities. And last year we had a target of 4 reports. We have also minimized it to 2 reports so that we can be able to track on performance and avoid the issues of reporting on processes. On the macro organizational structure, honorable members, I think that's what the GCIS has presented. But with us, the difference is that, you know, with the deputy minister, she has been also delegated fully the following entities, that is the FPB and the MDDA and the Brand SA on domestic matters. So these 3 are fully delegated to the deputy minister, and they also share the responsibilities around the DTT awareness or awareness or public awareness campaigns. We have also advertised the position of the DG. I think now we advertise it in the end of February. It was closing in March, but we could not find a candidate. And again, now we have re-advertised it together with those that of the GCIS, and we hope that this will be filled in, you know, within a short space of time. And with regards to the branches, the core, which is communication policy research and development, it has also been re-advertised. And the other one on industry and capacity development, we do not have funding for that. And then we have advertised the entity oversight, you know, a DDG post, but currently the CFO is also acting in that particular area. So this is our high-level structure on the positions that we have, although most of them are not filled and some are not funded. With the staff establishment, we have got around 374 positions that are actually approved in our establishment, and of those 374, only 90 are funded. And with regards to those that are additional to the establishment, they are on the extreme. So when you look at this slide, it shows very well that, you know, the department is undercapacitated. With regards to the budget allocation over the MTEF period, for this current financial year, we've got 1.4 billion, and for 2018 is 1.5, and 2019 is 1.6. And then with regards to this budget allocation per program, when you look at the program 4, that's where we've got, you know, our most of our budget going in that particular area. And with that 1.3, that is entity oversight, and most of the funds are actually, you know, transfers, and that includes also the GCIS. So when you look at, again, around programs, is that most of our budget is currently under Program 1, which is mainly administration, and then in Program 2, we've got 8.5 million, and then 22 million is currently in Program 3. That's what, when one looks at it, you can see that even our core, you know, programs are really not funded as in what is happening under Program 1. But the CFO will ultimately go through that and explain further what actually led to that kind of a situation. And then if we exclude, you know, transfers to public entities and the GCIS, under Program 1, we've got, you know, 62 million, and Program 2 is 8.5, Program 3 is 22 million, and the department only is left with only 100 million, you know, as its budget for the current financial year. So as I stated earlier, that, you know, the bulk goes to entities and also as well as the GCIS. Per economic classification, the huge percentage goes to our compensation of employees, and then the 23.5 ultimately goes to goods and services, and we've got no budget allocated for capital assets. Thank you. I will ask the CFO and the Chief Director responsible for corporate services to add, you know, if there is something that I might have not explained in my presentation. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thanks, Acting DG. Thanks, Honorable Chair. I think the Acting DG has explained thoroughly in terms of the current budget. But I think what we just need to make it clear, remember, is that last year when we did the presentation, our budget was only 75 million. So during adjustment budget, this year we got 41 million, but was earmarked only for DGT projects. So the increase in Program 3, why is sitting at 22 million, is basically that even this year they have funded the DGT project, but not fully. Given that the amount that is required to run the DGT project is more money, but that is the little that we have been afforded to can run the organization. Why the slide is so skewed in terms of Program 1, you see there are a lot of money going into that. Program 1, that's where your ministry and your departmental Program 1 station. And when the department starts, Treasury allocated only 12 million through GCIS for the establishment of the ministry. So as such, it's the ministry and the DG staff and the finance and HR that are basically appointed so that there is segregation of duties and to ensure that we comply in terms of the Public Finance Management Act and the public service regulations. And as such, it shows as if we don't care about the core component of the department. It's not like that. It's just that we are hoping that moving forward, as we discuss with National Treasury, we will get more funding to look at that element. But I just want to reiterate to the committee that the transfers to our entities, They make our budget to look as if we are a big department with a lot of money, whereas we are not, because included in that 1.3 is the 400 million that my colleague was talking about that get transferred to GCIS, and the rest get shared between ICASA, which takes the bigger chunk of the money, then followed by SABC, and then the rest share the smaller chunk of the money. So it may put the department in a serious constraint. For sure you have seen the slides on the vacancies in the department. Given this challenge, it'd be very, very difficult for the department to really implement the HR plan as set out, because in the absence of the money, there is no way you can implement the HR plan fully, which says even in terms of the 1% that is required for workplace skills plans, that requires 1% of the salaries budget to be allocated for training and development. It's very difficult for the department to arrive at that moment, because I was saying to the Honorable Minister that if we have to attend all the committees in Cape Town, somewhere in the third quarter of this financial year, the department may stop operating because there won't be any money to do the operations of the department, which is a challenge, that we will have people coming to work just for getting salaries, but no production will be taking place. And that's a serious challenge that we are facing. But let me put it to the committee that the portfolio committee has made a commitment that they will have engagement with National Treasurer on this matter and see how best they can assist the department in dealing with the funding challenges. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, DJ, for your presentation. Thank you for the two presentations. It was clear to us what your plans are for the next year, 5 years, year plan, performance plan. I'm going to put it in front of the committee so that they can deal with the questions, the two documents. Before I'm going to give to propose in your risk plan, the risk management plan, I don't see that you putting in there that your budget, the budget constraints in your plan. And I don't know if it is a format or whatever, the reason why you're not putting it there, but one should think that you stated it there, your financial position in the risk management plan. Can I get hints? You can explain to me afterwards. Honorable Mlambo, is that all? Honorable Labaskagne, we will get other hints. Honorable
Safa. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Sorry, before you start, Honorable Connie, welcome to the meeting. You came in late. Sorry that I didn't record the reports. They were busy with the presentation, but welcome. Let's take a member also, Honorable Connie.
Oh, thank you. Welcome, Honorable Connie. Thank you, Chair, and let me welcome the two presentations. I've got only two questions on the GCIS for now. The first one being this vacant post. We have said it's 3 years now since this post has been vacant, and it's worrisome also for the department to run properly. I heard you saying the minister has made an undertaking, or she has said that you must see to it that the posts are being filled, but you never told us about the time frames, looking at the fact that it has been 3 years since these posts were vacant. That's one. The second one, it's the issue that has been raised by the CFO, where he spoke about ill discipline, I will put it in that way, that when, as an example that he made, when a laptop is lost, there is a committee that looks into those kind of issues, and if it is found that there has been negligence on the part of the employee, it will be taken from his or her salary. Now, my question is, how many of those kind of cases of theft, for instance, that are in the seriousness of theft in the society, are there any cases that are with police, or are there any of your employees that are attending court cases? Because the way you have put it, you have said it has happened before. So if we can get the number of cases, or are there police investigations, or are there employees that are attending court cases for such kind of mischiefs? Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Thanks also for the presentations. Operating under such budgetary constraints, still being able to get clean audit, of course, is commended. On the first presentation, I think it's page 23, if I'm not where you are talking of the strategic risk. The last bullet on the roof, the root causes, ineffective recruitment practices, and the treatment plan. Assessment of qualifications and criminal records of recruited staff by
SSA and NIA. I would love to get a very clear explanation on this ineffective recruitment and the criminal records. Because we had something very interesting yesterday while dealing with the rehabilitations of I'm not sure whether a person has a criminal record. Will it be a lifetime a punishment? Or as to how do you, if a person has got the capacity to add value in the society, then you are still talking of a criminal record. And he went through rehabilitation processes, and then it's not welcome in the to add value to the society, to the economy. Perhaps you can just give an indication as to how is it a serious challenge. But the second one will go to my question. Will go to community broadcasting support. Is there any role that you are playing while this community broadcasting are being launched? Because my fear is that, as we have indicated, whoever sponsor or support this community broadcasting end up dictating perhaps terms to them. There is a lack of a sense of independence for them to broadcast freely because of the attachment. We support you, provided the outcome of of whatever you broadcast, it will be in favor of a particular perspective or ideology. So the role that you perhaps play while launching and perhaps taking them through to emphasize the sense of independence. Maybe check also whether there is a last one, because I see we have a few. Talking of switch off on the border lines, but there are also challenges. But you didn't indicate or reflect what are those challenges. Okay, maybe if we can just mention the challenges, if those challenges will be some impediments to what the completion of this process of the switching off along the border line. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Safaku, Honorable Connie, and then Honorable Sven.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I had two questions, but each of them were dealt with by the previous speakers. But just to add on the question that was posed by Honorable Mlambo, that on vacancies, if the vacancies you are referring to also include the acting positions, because we can't refer to them or ignore them as vacancies, because it means people still need to fill them as permanent positions. For the candidates to be able to account, because there was a situation where we had asked questions from some accounting member of another, I think it was all in the very same department previously, that the member was supposed to answer questions, but because the person was acting, having to have replaced the other person who was acting, then they could not account to say no. The excuse was, no, I came in the office yesterday, I can't report on that or comment on that based on the issues that I've just taken office yesterday, so I don't know what you're talking about. So these things of acting, it's too many actors acting for a very long time, it's really not working. The other one would be on lack of funding and the public awareness, specifically referring to the rural areas. What are we saying about those? Because they don't even have those radios, they don't even have those TVs. What are we saying about them? What are we going to do about that to make sure that they also get access, there's some kind of access or a way for them to access information coming from the Northern Cape that is very vast geographically, and then how are we going to assist our poor of the poorest in accessing information? I'm sure even now there are those who don't even know anything about the SKA SCAR project in the Northern Cape. So I think we need to do more to get to those down on the ground to be able to educate them and make information reach them. Thank you very much.
Chair, I think I'd like to welcome the presentation. I think the emphasis in regards to the vacant positions has been made, and I don't want to emphasize it any further, but for this position to be left vacant for that period of time, it's a cause of concern. Is those positions really necessary at this stage? After 2 years, maybe that should be redundant. The other question I have is that the research is important for this department, and we are outsourcing research. Is there any possibility of this department having in-house research done, since there is budgetary constraints you're experiencing? And maybe that would be part of the problem being solved, because the cost of research, I know from my past experiences, very expensive for research, and the department should look at that in-house research. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. the one concern, and I assume we said you can take us through this, is what was the reason for not filling these positions? I suppose you can explain that. Maybe there were reasons for not filling those posts. Then I just need clarity on the 90 funded post. Is it vacant or is it filled now, like we speak? Thank you. I'm going to give over to you for the... I think we must give the opportunity to what's the first presenter's name? GCI is first in the
Okay, thanks very much, Chairperson and honorable members. My colleagues will assist me where necessary. I'll try my best to answer.
Please don't say you are the only meeting.
No. In fact, let me start with that one. Of I'm the only, I've just started yesterday. Let me start with that. The practice, number one, if the person is acting in a position, when we count vacant number of vacant posts, we include it. Number one. So it's one of them. Whenever we report, even if a person is acting, we still say this is the number he's acting. And then our understanding and the good HR practices and responsibility carrying out and awarding is that when you act in a position, you act with full responsibilities. You cannot say, I'm acting, so I can't. It's just like when a minister is appointed, the following day when he gets or he gets in the office, whatever is on the table, you've got to deal with them. So I can't understand why a person can say, no, I've just got in. Maybe there was an explanation. But even the letter of appointment as an acting person, it says with full delegations and responsibilities, and you just have to carry them out. So that is what how I respond to that one. The number of vacant posts in GCIS, and let me just put this properly so that honorable members can understand it. The post of a DG of GCIS, that's the one that I'm saying took 3 years since it became vacant in 2012. Up to now, the post is still vacant. And the others that you see there also, although it cannot be 3 years full, but it is for an unreasonably long period that SMS members' post can be that vacant. And on average, it will be plus minus 18, plus minus 12. That's the situation that we had in GCIS for the past 3 years. Now, with the post of DG, I didn't say it has been filled. People have been acting in it from 2012 up to now. What I was referring to was that the person who was acting, who acted for almost 2.5 years, has been removed now on Monday. It has been replaced by Pumla Williams. That is what I was saying when I said there was a new person. But the post is still vacant. And the history of this post is that we did advertise the post. I'm sure we advertised it 4 times. And the minister decided, no, these are not relevant people. Then we kept on advertising it and the like. Now, the current minister who came gave an instruction about 3 weeks ago that we are no longer going to advertise it. We must do headhunting. So she's busy doing the headhunting, and I think in the very near future she shall have filled the post. That is a promise that she has made. Now, with regard to the other SMS post, I think all of you honorable members are aware that with regard to SMS members, the ministers would like to make decisions on them. It's not an administrative thing that is left to the DDGs and the like. So the previous minister had control of this, the approval of putting the post. We advertised them. There was no approval of going ahead with interviews. We had to re-advertise them, and it was toing and froing on like that. That is why we had them up to this. It was the prerogative of the minister. And I must hasten to say, in GCIS, some years back, we had a very, very good turnaround of filling posts. We were filling posts within 2 months. We were even chosen as a case study by DPSA, where we advised other government departments as to how quickly can you fill a post. But for the past 3 years, unfortunately, things started to change, and that is why we are at where we are right now. The minister has said 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, that we re-advertise all those posts. We make sure that in the next 2 months, those posts are filled. The posts have been advertised. There are about 11 of them, SMS members, including this one of a DG. So I'm sure this of DG we're going to headhunt, but all SMS posts that are vacant, we have advertised them, and we are busy with making sure that we do them. Unfortunately, an honorable member, the regulation that 6 months, it is reductant and the like, we are just going to violate it because we really need this post. It doesn't mean we don't need to. And if you look at them, they are posted at a very high level. They have two posts of deputy directors general, and chief directors, and those posts, really, we need them. And without them, it has even affected our service delivery negatively. So we feel that we have to fill them. With regard to the risks, we identified the possible cause of those risks that we're saying. We are not saying that is what is happening. When we say ineffective recruitment practice, we're saying that can be a cause of not getting proper skills. And the issue of criminal records, we are saying if we are not very vigilant in making criminal checks and the like, we will get the wrong people into the department and anything can happen. But with regard to the issue of a person having been rehabilitated and converted and whatever, DPSA, fortunately, with the new public service regulations, it has given guidance on that thing to say if a person has been found guilty for the past 5 years, you cannot hold a person against that. You've got to pardon the person. Previously, there was no guideline and the like. So as from the 1st of August last year, they've given us the regulations that says, Aman, when a person has served the sentence, you must waive this thing. Previously, the personnel was blocked and everything, wouldn't even appoint the person. So that is how we do it. And then I'm sure the issue of resource, I'm sorry, the research is a recommendation. We can look into that and then look at the branch head, advise the branch head today if we can in-source. We agree with you. Research is very expensive. But again, within the department itself, like we said, we've got limited resources. In terms of capacity, employing more people so that they can conduct that research, it will be something that we'll have to look into and see how we can address it. I don't know whether the CFO, maybe there is something, and the other members.
No, thanks, Dr. Smagani. Indeed, it is important to fill the vacant posts. But I just wish to indicate to Honourable Member that National Treasury has, with effect from 2016-17 financial year, locked away, ring-fenced, budget for compensation of employees. So if we do not fill posts, we lose the money. If we do not fill posts, we lose the money. That is another pressure to make sure that the departments do honor the minimum period that they can have post vacants. It serves as a deterrent. We have so far, I know that you are not presenting the 16-17 financial statements, but we have lost around about unaudited, let me qualify it, unaudited, around about 5.1 million, even though we do not have money. Let me clarify the question on the ill discipline. I really apologize if I gave an impression that there is ill discipline, but that is not what I meant to portray. What I meant to portray was that we have a very strict system in the department that if I, as Zweli Momek, negligently, and I say negligently, not criminally, and ill-disciplined, because sometimes we err as people, but negligently so, it cannot be fair that the taxpayer has to incur the cost to replace. It is not. And it's quite clear on Section 45 of the PFMA. If a laptop is given to me, I have a responsibility to secure it. If it happens that some criminals come across my car, I'm in a mall, and I left my laptop in my car, and it can be seen, they break into my car, that is pure negligence. And we cannot have government incurring such costs. So we are saying at GCIS, we have a strict system of making sure that the taxpayer will not unfairly incur costs due to my negligence. So we do not have a culture of ill discipline. In fact, us having done that, it's very seldom that you would have a staff member losing a laptop. So it serves as a deterrent. We declare these figures on our annual financial statements, but I'm quite happy to give the statistics maybe for the past 3 years, and I can even give a memo that explains how the theft and losses system works. It's a comprehensive system, and we know that other institutions in our group of communication, they actually like this system and they want to adopt. And I think we are being very much fair to taxpayers in that regard. I think I've clarified the issue of vacancies that we are losing found. In in-house research, we take the comment, and I think we will engage our research unit, and we'll look at better ways of spending public money. If it's cheaper, and we will not even lose the quality of the research, then it's something that can be considered. So we do take the comment. Thank you.
Engaged with the MDDA that, you know, we need to educate even, public office bearers, you know, around the issues of governance and their roles and responsibilities. So that program, it's going to be carried out. With regards to the radio, the NCRF, which is the National Committee Forum, you know, that is a body that most of the radio stations are affiliated to have also committed, because we had several engagements with them around those issues, and we will be participating in their national conference, you know, towards the end of the month. And we are also going to engage with the National Association of Broadcasters so that, you know, we've got a collective approach in terms of those particular issues. So we are, you know, geared towards educating them around the issues of governance. I just hope that I'm not going to scare you, but I think the issue of the DTT, you know, we've got serious challenges. As I stated earlier, probably if we had our own risk, personnel, they could have picked up that, you know, the way in which this project is being managed might ultimately create a problem. As I stated earlier, the rollout, that is the implementation, is with the DOC. But with the procurement and funding, it lies with USASA. USASA, which is an entity that is with the Ministry of Communications. When they procured, one of the challenges that we have is that when they procured the set-top boxes and its accessories, when they did this thing, it was in the absence of a policy that guides, you know, digital migration. They went ahead, they appointed around 27 companies, and of the 27 companies, they plan to have them in three cycles. And then they only allocated the work to three companies. And then there was an issue at some stage where the DOC became so suspicious when we requested information, they did not want to divulge it. Then the DOC ministry, or the Ministry of Communications, instituted an investigation through the Office of the National Treasury Procurement Office. That investigation revealed that, you know, there were highly irregularities, you know, in the procurements of those set-top boxes. And then the report that we received from Treasury was a draft report, which was shared with the Ministry of Telecoms and with USASA. Then in the process, that those recommendations were not implemented. Instead, USASA now has appointed its has requested the Office of the Auditor General, and those the findings of the Office of the Office of the Auditor General are the same with those of Treasurer. So now they've decided to suspend and even cancel some of the contracts. So that's where the challenge we are. That is the biggest challenge that we are sitting with. They've also some of the manufacturers now taken the matter now through the arbitration process. Some are threatening, litigation in terms of suing for damages. So we are in that particular challenge that we have now, and USASA now wants to ultimately go to court by the end of next week to ultimately get the court to endorse their decision that they've taken. So that is one challenge that that is the biggest challenge, because of the 27 companies that have been appointed and they've got appointment letters, we don't know what is their defense strategy so far. So that is the biggest kind of an administrative challenge that we have. The second challenge that we all know and everybody else is aware of is that of funding. We have presented our case to National Treasury, and we have requested the minister to engage with the minister of also telecoms, because of then you've got other entities that are implementing digital migration, even including our SABC. Now everybody else wants money from Treasury. So the funding has become a critical challenge, for the particular project that, we are facing. The other challenge that we have is the case that is before the Constitutional Court that we have, for instance, that we are awaiting for a ruling as far as the standard is concerned, which typically we foresee the challenge being that at the moment we are supposed to be having, set-top boxes in the market, that is in the retail being sold. But now, because of this particular case, the manufacturers do not know what would be the outcome. So that is delaying the whole process, because at the time that when we receive the ruling, then we don't know whether we're going to switch off and what kind of boxes that they need to sell. Because of us sitting around this table, I think all of us do not qualify for a subsidized or free set-top box, but will ultimately, go and buy if we do not want to be, for instance, with multi-choice. So that is another challenge that we are currently having. The other challenge that we are having, which we believe that as things normalize within the SABC financially, is a lack of content in the meantime. And if this process delays altogether, is that we're not going to be able, to free the spectrum, what we call the digital dividend. That is, we'll continue to have ICASA not licensing some of the, service providers or other broadcasters due to the fact that, there's no spectrum. Hence, the biggest outcry that we have today is that, ICASA has put in, the moratorium on licensing. And it's because of there's no free spectrum. But if this project moves further, then we'll be able, to free the dividend. And again, the money could be used, for other, economic development, programs in terms of growing the sector. So those are the kind of challenges that in the main will affect or currently threaten, our switch off. So the other aspect that we have, which is not really a major problem, is that if we manage, at the moment, the of the manufacturers that have been given or have been appointed by USASA, only one of them ultimately uses satellite. So at the moment, we're running short of satellite boxes, which, again, it is going to effectively affect the borderline areas, because most of the borderline areas need the satellite dishes so as to avoid interferences, with other countries. So if we do not get those boxes, then it means that, come 2018, we're going to be on our own, because of we have missed, you know, deadlines. Most of the African countries have missed, you know, these deadlines. So now there's only one company, and these satellite boxes is not only in the borderline areas. When you look at the topography of other areas, like if you look at Limpopo, I can talk about an area called Mafefe, you know, your Makgobonsvlei, they'll need satellite. So those areas, we cannot be connected because of the shortage of boxes. So that is one of the challenges that we have, that now we are moving into a phase where we're connecting the borderline areas. So we have engaged with USASA over the past weekend and the minister, and we are going to have a stakeholder kind of an engagement section where we have even invited Treasury, so that, you know, we try to resolve some of the, you know, procurement matters, although the finance matters, we have escalated them to the executive authorities of the three departments, you know, to engage and agree upon. And we hope that probably they'll come up with different kind of funding given our financial or our economic conditions in the country. And then the other aspect that I wanted to be talking about is when you look at the rural areas, the digital migration, if people are connected now, is that the challenge is they can access the radio through the set-top box. At the moment, they've got access to about 19 radio stations, regardless of where they are. So your hope station, you know, somebody sitting in Musina can access it. So that is not really a problem. But the other challenge that we have, again, is the very same people that qualify for set-top boxes, they also, some of them can't even afford a television set. So these are some of the issues that we are currently looking at. And with regards to the rural areas, we have looked into an area, and we are going to work on a different, you know, awareness strategy, to work also with various, you know, government departments at all levels and capitalize or jump on the bandwagon of looking at the other programs to ensure that, you know, with the minimum resources that we have, how do we capitalize, for instance, in the outreach programs that are done, you know, at local and provincial level, so that we keep our people informed. And again, we are also looking into, should Treasury, you know, be at our, you know, gives us something, you know, we're going to be looking also at the programs of getting volunteers through this, also the CDW, you know, program in local municipalities. So it's something that we are looking at, because of, this is technology, but you can't give technology to somebody who can't read, can't write, and you don't even provide proper communication and proper support, you know, in that particular area. The other aspect that has been raised, I think with regards to the positions, the DG position of DOC was re-advertised again, closing on the 31st of March, and that was the third time, we could not find candidates, and the recent one that closed on the 31st of March, we only received one application, and it was even irrelevant. That even if you wanted to consider the previous ones, it wouldn't even help an inch. And also with the DDG post, the two have been advertised. Unfortunately, with one on policy, we only had three applications, and the other one ultimately, you know, withdrew, so we could not proceed with it. Same as with entity oversight, we had challenges. So these positions are very critical. But part of what has been happening, also I think I want to state something that my colleague forgot. The DG GCIS even went at cabinet level, which was ultimately didn't even pass the test. So it's one of the aspects. But part of the challenge is we'll have to look into our traditional methods, and agree with the risk people that, you know, our traditional methods in terms of, you know, recruitment processes, you know, the ideal situation would be to appoint a DG and the DG appoints his or her team. But it seems like, you know, this this methodology is not working and it's actually holding us back. And how do we manage this thing? And although it helps in terms of building a team, but it looks like we'll continue to have certain challenges. So with the DOC, we are not like the GCIS. We've got only 3 funded positions for the current financial year. That is the DG and the 2 DDG posts that now are also have also been subjected to the headhunting process. And we hope that, you know, in 2-3 months we'll be able, you know, to fill in those particular positions. I think I've answered all the... Oh, the other one is the of the 90. Yeah, I think the chief director corporate will deal with that.
Thank you, Acting DG Chair. Of the 90 posts, as you have asked, we have 14 that are vacant, and the ones that we can fill in this financial year is only 5. Is the 3 posts that the DG has already mentioned, and the internal audit post and the asset management post, because we, as indicated, that we still rely on TCIS on the internal audit function, and they have really raised a concern about the capacity on their side and the strain on the officials. So the other posts we cannot fill because, as already indicated, when the DTT project was handed over to the DOC, it didn't have resources. So we had to stop filling the posts so that we have money available to fund the contract employees that had to be employed in that project. So hence we only filling only those 5 for this financial year. Thank you.
My previous life, we used to ask the questions to the government. That's why I was asking about the funded post. It came about that some departments, I'm not saying we're doing it, is hiding money there. Remember, it's funded post. They're not filling it for them to be able to do other projects. But they, when they present it, they will say that it's funded. So we know about that kind of dynamic. I was opposition that time, and that's why I asked it.
Thanks, Chair. I think the question that you have asked, Chair, is about the risk management plan that must be with us. We pardon that we didn't put the slides, but we do have a top 10 strategic risk for the department that we deal with. And I think I will only deal with the 2 that you have said we didn't respond with. Our first risk that we have identified was limited human resource. With the potential effect of it is a partial achievement of DOC mandate as set by the acting DG, because if you have limited human resource, the likelihood of you not achieving the mandate of the department is very high. And we said the root cause of that is the contract fiscal, the funding issue that we have. And we said as part of the mitigation factors, the memorandum of understanding that we have entered with the GCIS on other operations so that it assists the department more is what we have currently. But what we can do moving forward is continuous discussion with National Treasury to look for funding. The second one that is linked to that, as part of our strategic risk, is non-compliance to public service and treasury regulation. Because in the absence of proper human resource, there won't be segregation of duty. And as a result, it will have negative impacts on the outcome of the department. Maybe we can even keep the audit clean, the clean audit by that, given that. But also that we won't be able to meet the standards as set by the regulation. And the challenge for that, Chair, is also the inadequate funding issue that we have raised. And as a result, we have developed policies that must talk to the current situation, so that even when we are audited based on what we have as a unit, so that the auditors must understand the challenges that we find ourselves in. And for sure, as part of moving forward, the discussion, the continuous discussion with Treasurer, we will assist to deal with those things. We did identify those risks. I think for the future slides, we'll make sure that those top 10 risks are put on the slides for you to see them. Thanks very much.
Is there any follow-up questions for clarity?
Thanks, Chair. I don't expect to be given an answer now, but maybe in the future of how are we going on about assisting the poor of the poorest who don't have access to TV and the radio stations. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I think they did write something that
thanks, Honourable Chair. Just to respond to the concern of Honourable Member, is that our provincial offices, we've got communicators in districts, and our focus is more on the development communication approach, where we inform our community not through mediated communication, where we will do door-to-door and taxi rank. And what we've done now, we will focus now more on the deep rural area, where we know, because we also don't have footprint all over. So this is our focus in the provincial and local liaison unit.
Thank you very much. I think, firstly, I need to congratulate the department on the achievement of that team order. We are very, we like to see that the department is getting green. Although I was saying here, a notice, in our ears, because it's so small, there's hardly things that you can do. So you cannot come here with an outer bed that is qualified or whatever, because it's too small, it's money, not money. So you want to say something on this?
No, no, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe with the outreach program, you heard all honorable members say that we are from different provinces. I've got a constituency office in Zeerust, Mafeking, and it takes, it stretches along the border of Botswana. And I'll be having program while on recess. I've got some programs, different programs. So perhaps if one knows exactly that we'll be having a program, we can utilize, because of the constraints of the financial constraints, while we are having just a public thing in a particular area, and then you bring him also on board, just put you on a program so that we can share. Community can be able to get most of this valuable information throughout the province. So it's key that we maybe exchange or contact so that from time to time when we are in a particular province, when we are in Northern Cape, the honorable member is busy with certain projects at the her constituency or his constituency can also take you on board. But the last one, Chair, is this issue of treasury. I think it is important that we as the select committee cannot be there the following day. It will be the portfolio committee that we together jointly we sit together and have an approach. Either we, all these other entities in the same roof, also bring treasury on board and look, find a way of looking at the challenges of these budgetary challenges. We are aware that since 2008, due to the economic meltdown, we had a problem. But the market, the volatility of the markets are influenced, of course, by sentiments, the internal and external one. So our downgrading can also be having some other serious impact. You see. So we have to sit down and share ideas and then how to escape out of these serious challenges. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. From my side to the department, it is trying to keep on doing the right things. And I wish you all of the best under the new leadership, and I hope that things will change. Sometimes, not saying that the previous one didn't do whatever, but sometimes new people will come with new ideas. Strategies how to turn around the department to take into account. So I wish you well, and you are excused. Thank you. Welcome to the department. Can we stay behind because we need to adopt the report? Members, can we proceed by adopting this report? The Select Committee on Communications and Public Enterprises, having considered the annual performance plan of the Government Communications and Information System, GCIS, for 2017-18, 2019-20, reports that it has concluded its deliberations. Thank you. Thereon, can we have a mover?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I move for the adoption of both reports.
Oh, okay, both. Thank you.
Thank you
very much for your cooperation and for being here. Thank you. In this meeting as a chair. Yay, my voice, I'm telling you. You do not need to forget your salary.
Which minutes did they adopt now? Do you know?
The third of May, and the second one?
Well, you can go to the leadership contract.
Okay.
Well, I don't want to mislead you.
And you don't want to mislead you to lunch. Hey.
No,
I'm kidding. Okay, I'll go and ask her. And then, thanks very much for your help. No?